With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Thanks so much for being with us. A fine Wednesday morning to you. A lot to get to in these final 2 hours of the show. Tiger's painkiller problem, I think, is being undersold and underplayed. I'll tell you why coming up here in about 17 minutes from now. Also, in about 35 minutes from now, we'll hear from Warren Sapp, who says he's suffering from memory loss already in his mid-40s, and in his mind, it's absolutely connected to playing in the NFL and his career. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 on Twitter, DA on CBS. Mick is in Minneapolis, listening on CBS Sports Radio's 1520 there. Good morning, Mick.
Good morning.
How you doing, buddy?
Good.
Good. What's going on?
I just wanted to bring up when you were talking about draft picks, and I know you were talking about mainly the NBA, and then you made some references with football.
Yeah.
In one way, the Dallas Cowboys back in the 90s would not be where they were without that whole Herschel Walker trade, stockpiling all those draft picks and building that kind of dynasty of Troy Aikman and those teams. And that was really because of those draft picks. So I think that's one great example where that can really work well and swing a team's chances in the other way.
Yeah, and I think that might be the only one, Mick. And I think that we constantly in America latch on to this idea of the Herschel Walker trade, that one trade, one blockbuster can build a dynasty. And it is built up in legend and lore. The Dallas Cowboys were brilliant. It was a masterstroke by Jimmy Johnson to recognize we've got no talent on this roster. Let's start over and let's trade the only guy that has any value, Herschel Walker, away. And it took a chump in Minnesota because the Vikings had been to the NFC Championship game in 1987. They were a perennial contender in the playoff. They had won the division a number of times. And so by 1990, the Vikings feel like just Herschel Walker and an explosive player like that will put them over the top to win a Super Bowl. And so the Vikings make one of the dumbest trades in NFL history, because not only do they trade away a slew of picks and players, but they were totally robbed blind by Jimmy Johnson, because what Jimmy put in the contract of the deal was, well, you trade us guys like Darren Nelson and this guy and that guy, Jesse Solomon, but if they're not on our roster, we get a draft pick for them. And so the Vikings were like, yeah, sure, well, these are good players, you'll want them. And what the Cowboys always knew was, we don't want any of your players. We just want the draft picks. And so Jimmy brought in all of these players and said, we're cutting you the day you get here because I just want the draft pick. And so the Vikings were totally foolish in this. They didn't even know they were trading away that many draft picks. And yes, it built the Cowboys dynasty of the 1990s. It built it, no doubt, one deal. But let me bring you 10 years later to another blockbuster deal. Washington traded its first-round draft pick, which I think was 2 overall, if not mistaken, to the Saints for Ricky Williams. And New Orleans and Mike Ditka, in one of the dumbest decisions ever, said, we're Ricky Williams away from being great, or at least a playoff team. We'll trade you our entire draft. And next year, the Saints traded away 8 picks for Ricky Williams. 8, including 2 first-rounders. In 99, in the Ricky Williams draft, they traded away their first, their third, their fourth, their fifth, their sixth, their seventh. In the following year, they traded Washington their first and their third. And that's all just so the Saints could move up 7 spots, number 5, to take Ricky Williams. What did Washington become? What did Washington do with the Ricky Williams trade? They got 8 picks, 2 ones, 2 threes, an entire draft. Washington had its own draft in 99 and then got all of the Saints picks in 99. What did Washington do? Well, we never have 30 for 30s about the Ricky Williams trade from a Washington standpoint because it didn't amount to anything. So that's what I'm talking about. Everybody points to the Herschel Walker deal. It's like we could build a dynasty out of this. You got to just trade away a guy. We could build a dynasty. Yeah, if you find clowns on the other side to trade away all their draft picks, it's great. That's oftentimes not going to happen anymore. But you also don't ever hear about these massive hauls that don't amount to anything. I mentioned the RG3 trade. It didn't do anything for Washington. I'm sorry, for the Rams. And then in this case, I mean, Washington did pick up Champ Bailey in that deal, but they didn't end up becoming a powerhouse. They didn't end up becoming a dynasty, but we never talk about that part. So there's a lot of trades that you think are this haul of draft picks and prospects that never pan out, which is why I think the Celtics deal, you know, people are enthralled by. It's like, oh my God, this makes so much sense. You're picking up all these draft picks. Well, you got to use them at some point. Just having draft picks doesn't get you anything. And the Celtics were already very good this past season. And I think that Danny Ainge had been very savvy in transitioning from one era to another era. But having 6 picks over the next 3 years in the first round or whatever that is, doesn't amount to anything unless you actually use them to draft great players or to trade for great players. The anniversary, 1993, which means 24 years ago, one of the most famous shots in NBA history, the 1993 NBA Finals, which could be the greatest NBA Finals ever, at least the greatest that didn't go to 7 games. When John Paxson hits the game-winning 3 in Game 6. It's a 3-2 Bulls lead in the series. They're in Phoenix. The Suns have a 2-point lead, 98-96, with just seconds to play. This is essentially the Bulls' final possession. Michael Jordan has the ball, bringing it up court. Again, down 2 and up 3-2. If the Suns win this game, it's going to a decisive game number 7.
They want Michael to get a full head of steam, try to keep him in the middle of the floor.
Well, Pippen got the snap. Here's Paxson for 3. Yes, the Bulls take a 1-point lead, and Phoenix calls for time with 3:09 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. John Paxson converts.
Yes, and it counts. Marv Albert on the NBC call. I think that was Fratello with him as well. So, what an incredible shot. That was with less than 4 seconds to play. If Paxson misses that shot, the Bulls lose. It's 3-3. Remember, the Bulls never went to a Game 7 in any of their NBA Finals, and it would have been a Game 7 in Phoenix. The Bulls would have had to win a Game 7 on the road if Paxson doesn't hit that shot. And I believe yesterday was the 24th anniversary of that shot. Now, that Phoenix team was stacked. Barkley was at his MVP best. Kevin Johnson was great. Dan Majerle was great. That Suns team was great. I think that was the best opponent the Bulls played in any of their 6 NBA Finals. I think it was better than the Stockton and Malone Jazz in 97-98. It was better than the Showtime Lakers in 91. That Showtime Lakers, that was without Kareem. That was their last NBA Finals with Magic. I think it was better than that Blazers team in 92. And it was savvier than that 96 Sonics team which was young and thought they were going to be there a million more times. This Suns team was built to win that year and had finally gotten over the hump of getting past Olajuwon and the Rockets, getting past David Robinson and the Spurs. That was a great team, and that was a great series, and that was really the closest I think the Bulls were to losing any of the finals with Jordan, because they would have played a Game 7 on the road. But I thought this was interesting because when LeBron in Game 3 of the NBA Finals drives and kicks to Kyle Korver corner pocket and Korver puts up the three, Kyle Korver makes that shot, LeBron is lauded for making the right basketball play. That's one of the most effective, efficient, successful three-point shooters in NBA history. Kyle Korver, open shot, corner pocket, hit that, Cavaliers win game three. LeBron kicks it out, Korver misses. Durant comes back down the floor, hits his big three. Warriors go up 3-0, and the narrative is LeBron passed up the final shot. LeBron passed up the final shot, and so thus, again, for the LeBron haters, he can never be Michael. And when I saw this was the anniversary yesterday, and I went back and I watched the Paxson shot, it just reminded me, oh, right, all of those LeBron haters keep forgetting that Michael did this not once but twice for championships. Now, on that play, Michael brings it up the floor. He brings it across midcourt. He passes to Scottie Pippen, who passes left to Horace Grant. Michael Jordan is not one of the final three players on the final possession of Game 6 on the road down 2. Michael is not demanding the ball back. There's no play run that says get it right to Michael. No. The Chicago Bulls let Michael bring it up. He passes to Pippen, who passes to Grant, who drives and kicks to a wide open Paxson, who drills the three. Michael Jordan is not one of the final three people who touch the ball on the game-winning possession. But nobody ever says, how could Michael not take that final shot? He's not clutch. How could he not? He needs to have the ball on the final. Had John Paxson missed the shot like Kyle Korver, could we then go back and say, how could Michael not take the final shot? Why would he ever let the ball out of his hands? It's got to be Michael or nobody. I fast forward, 1997 NBA Finals. Game 6, at home. Bulls up 3-2, looking to seal the NBA Finals against the Jazz in their first matchup. Just seconds to play against the Utah Jazz in Game 6. Bulls up 3-2 again. If they lose Game 7, they had never played in a Game 7 of the Finals. Michael drives, jumps, two-handed pass to Steve Kerr, who takes two steps inside the three-point line, drills the jumper. Bulls win 4-2 and are NBA champions. Had Steve Kerr missed that shot and the Bulls had lost that game and gone to a Game 7, would we have been saying, how could Michael pass up the final shot? You're giving it to Steve Kerr? What, you don't want the final shot? But we say that about LeBron because Kyle Korver missed the shot. I bring this up because I'm just so sick and tired of the revisionist history that we do with the NBA. I'm so sick and tired of it. It's because whatever happened yesterday is the only thing that happened. Michael made the right basketball plays. Michael should have given it up to the open shooter. The Bulls were a great team, and thus, when Paxson or Kerr make those shots, it's part of the game plan. It can't all be Michael takes the final shot every single game, every single playoff game, every single playoff series. Those were the right basketball plays and amounted to championships. But because we have to keep Michael in this kind of like amber case, like a mosquito from the Jurassic Park, we can't ever actually look back and say, oh yeah, right, well, he didn't always take the final shot. And that actually did benefit him and benefit the Bulls. But LeBron passes out of it and goes, well, see, he's not Michael, because Michael would take that final shot. Let's do some homework here. Let's remember. Let's do some memory work here. 855-212-4CBS. Tiger Woods talked about, or at least wrote about, his painkiller problem yesterday. And I thought about an incredible piece done by Rex Chapman about his painkiller addiction as a former athlete. And I want to talk about that next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Mornings, mothership.
She tripped while dancing. My pants fell down. I saw her down.
A match made in heaven, huh?
How they'll make their first child as well.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember, full episodes of the show available on iTunes. If you miss anything or want to hear it again, go to iTunes, subscribe for free, listen to us on demand. Whatever segments you want, interviews you want, hours that you want, you can listen to everything. It's all archived there at iTunes every single day. Brian's in Las Vegas, CBS Sports Radio's 1140. What's up, Brian?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, my man. How you doing?
Good. I just want to talk about that John Paxson shot.
Yes, sir.
I was a 14-year-old in 1993, and, man, I think it was the greatest game in NBA history and one of the greatest shots in NBA history. But people don't remember the Bulls were down two, and it was initially it was Horace Grant who made the pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Paxson hit that shot, man, I remember I jumped up and I hit my head on the ceiling, almost had a bad concussion. But as a 14-year-old, man, I taped the game, and to this day I still have that tape. And I tell you, man, John Paxson was just unbelievable, and I still think about him a lot to this day, man. He was just a great guy, and it was just an unbelievable shot, man. What? And I remember Jordan, he was the one who dribbled the ball up the court. And he passed it to Pippen. Pippen passed it to Horace Grant, who kicked it out to Paxson, who was wide open. And you can just book it. You know, Paxson was one of the greatest shooters of all time when he's wide open. So I knew he was going to hit the shot.
Yeah,
and
no,
it was
you're
just an excellent game.
You're right about all of that. And that's true, that game six of the 1993 NBA Finals, which we just saw as an anniversary yesterday, 24 years yesterday, was one of the greatest games in NBA Finals history. It was a back-and-forth heavyweight bout between two great teams. And it seemed impossible at that time that the Suns did not win a championship, that they would never get back to the NBA Finals with that core, but they never did. Charles is in Harrisburg, listening to 96.5 to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Chuck?
Oh, first off, longtime listener, first-time caller, and this early in the morning, you got to beam me up.
All right, buddy. All right, right on.
Yay, first off, this isn't that great of a story. But I don't know what other radio program would even want to hear this story.
Well,
other than you guys.
Sounds like we want to hear it. Okay, what do you got?
Yeah.
What do you got?
So I was working in radio at the time in, like, Parkersburg, West Virginia. Now, I'll go back to 93, and this is, like, when I'm 10 years old, and we're playing basketball in the backyard, and we're like, I'm John Paxson after he makes that shot. It's like, oh, my God, I'm John Paxson. Watch this. So fast forward till, I don't know, maybe 5-7 years ago, I'm working in Parkersburg, West Virginia with a country station there. And I get a call from a promoter and he's like, I want to bring this, singer in. I'm like, all right, whatever. You know, I'm in the middle of nowhere. Sure, this singer can get on the air. So I'm talking with the guy and I'm like, Paxson. I was like, I haven't heard that last name since John Paxson, you know, with the Chicago Bulls. And he goes, yeah, that's my cousin.
Oh, yeah?
I'm like, get out of here. You're related to John Paxson? I was like, and you're some, like, no-name country singer? And he's like, well, you know, I'm trying not to be a no-name country singer.
Did that guy become anybody?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but, okay. I mean, if you really want to look him up, his name was Zach Paxson from, like, Eastern Ohio or something like that.
How was he? Was he good?
You know, he was friendly.
Okay.
But as for talented.
Okay.
I don't remember that, but thanks for the memories, man.
Okay.
24 years, make me feel old. Thank you.
I know, man. Same here, Charles. You know, as I mentioned, earlier in the show. Last night I went to this anniversary presented by American Express. They got a Q&A together for Shaq and Zoe, hosted by Doris Burke, and they went over their memories of the 1992 NBA draft. They went 1-2. Shaq out of LSU, Zoe out of Georgetown. That was the 25th anniversary of the 92 NBA draft. I sat there going, God, 25 years? I remember watching that draft and wondering what Shaq was going to be and kind of enthralled by the intensity of Zoe. That was the draft of Christian Laettner as well. He went to the Timberwolves and thinking, I wonder if Laettner is going to be good in the pros or not. Does that translate over? You know, he's not as physically gifted as a guy like Shaq. Maybe more fundamentally sound, way more big games. Shaq was not known as a great worker at that point in time. Never was over the course of his career. But I said, God, it's been 25 years since the 92 draft. And as I'm sitting there last night watching this, and this is at the PlayStation Theater down near Times Square, I couldn't help but just think about two things, because they were talking about a lot about them being teammates on the Heat, but also about their early years as rivals and Shaq going to a bad Orlando team and Zoe going to a bad Hornets team. And I just kept thinking about Zoe hitting that playoff shot. I think it was a game 5 first round against the Celtics at the Hive, and hitting that jumper, falling on his back and being mobbed as the Hornets won that playoff series when the Hornets were totally hot. And that Shaq as a young player on the Magic ripping down the rim at Continental Airlines Arena, just breaking the rim. It was like, wow, we've never seen that before. So yesterday, Tiger Woods, or maybe this was on Monday, but yesterday we talked about it, Tiger Woods admitting in a memo that he screenshotted off of his iPhone, 40% battery, by the way, that he is addicted to painkillers and seeking professional help. And I read the Point After column by Rex Chapman in this week's Sports Illustrated. And Rex Chapman was the number 8 pick overall in the NBA draft, and he came out of Kentucky. He was the 8th pick overall in 88 by the Charlotte Hornets and spent 12 years in the NBA. And he was addicted to pain medication. And you might remember him having the shoplifting situation, and he was caught on camera, and he said he didn't know he was doing it, and everybody kind of made fun of him. And he admitted that it was because he was addicted to Vicodin, Oxy, and some others, and was living a life of isolation and erratic behavior. Well, he's speaking out against pain medication, and this was a really interesting column that he wrote. He said, imagine if every day in America, 171 people died from the Ebola virus. Well, it might be impossible to imagine, but that is the crisis that is facing America. He said, what if every month there were 8 crashes involving 747 airplanes? What would be our reaction? He said, that's how many people are dying from pain overdose, medication overdose or drug overdose in America every day, 171. He said, 62,000 Americans died from drug overdoses last year. That's a 19% increase from 2015. He talked about his home state of Kentucky and that 1,300 Kentuckians died from drug overdoses last year with opioids in their system. And that, so that's about 4 Kentuckians a day died from drug overdoses last year. And that also, more than 353 million doses of opioid painkillers were dispensed in the state of Kentucky alone that year. That means, and that this is what Rex Chapman writes, that means every man, woman, and child in the state of Kentucky in the year 2015 was given 79 pills, 79 painkiller pills. Every man, woman, and child. So a 1-year-old, a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, whatever. Obviously, they weren't prescribed that, but that's the amount of painkillers prescribed by Kentucky doctors. 79 pills per resident in Kentucky in 1 year. He said the U.S. makes up 4.6% of the world's population. So let's just round it up to 5. We consume 99% of the world's hydrocodone. We have 5% of the U.S. population. we take 99% of the world's hydrocodone. Tiger Woods is a pain medication addict, and he's seeking professional help. He's not the only one. This guy is famous. This guy is rich. This guy's a celebrity. This guy's a living legend. But he is not the only one. This is a huge issue, and I love the piece done by Rex Chapman. People don't want to talk about it because, well, people like pain medication. And the medical industry wants to keep giving pain medication because, well, there's a lot of reasons. Financially, but it also makes people feel better. People want it. People get addicted to it. People need it. But what we're watching Tiger go through is a national epidemic. And we can joke about it, and he falls asleep at the wheel of a car. And look, I poked fun at it as well. But Rex Chapman brings to light, I mean, the idea that these stats are staggering. We take 99% of the world's hydrocodone? I mean, there's enough pills given out by doctors every year in the state of Kentucky that everybody in the state would get 79 of them? So that means take out all the kids that aren't taking them and all the adults that aren't taking them, and that means that there are people that are getting four times that, five times that in a year. You know, I grew up in the sticks, and small town, couple thousand people, couple stoplights, one Burger King, that's it, only fast food restaurant, and we have overdoses every year now, ODs every year. And it's painkillers, and it's heroin, and it's really addictive opioids, and this is a major, massive problem. And Tiger's going through this, and this is just a window into what our country's dealing with. When we come back on the show, a little sound check, your best audio of the day, including Warren Sapp discussing memory loss only in his early 40s. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mornings, Mothership.
I've been wanting to talk to you, and thank you for trashing Mraz. Nauseated me, and I've wanted to trash him then, too.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
As a pop culture phenomenon like myself.
Welcome back. 41 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being with us. The DA Show. If you miss any part of it and want to watch the show's highlights, we've got a full YouTube page dedicated to that. So the best takes of the show, the best moments of the interviews of the show every single day available on YouTube. Just search the DA Show or CBS Sports Radio on YouTube, and you'll see an entire page dedicated to our show every single day in video form on YouTube. So that's pretty cool. 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. Robert in Pontiac, Michigan tweeting, DA, my favorite NBA final was the Celtics and Suns game 5, Gar Hurd shot of the buzzer. I was a teenager at the time, became hooked on the NBA. That was 76, I want to say, 74, 76. Yeah, the Gar Hurd shot, one of the great shots also. And watching, I went back and I rewatched the Celtics and the Lakers 30 for 30 the other day. And I know that just seems totally insane because it's a 7-hour extravaganza. And I went back and I rewatched it, but you know, I wanted to give it another shot. It's right in my wheelhouse, as you might imagine. Look, if you listen to the show long enough, you know exactly what is my sweet spot. That is retro sports. And that, you know, that is the memories of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, or even before. Obviously, I wasn't alive before, but I love talking about the history of the game, the things that happened, the players that came before, because today we are so wrapped up in the today. And I really feel like the great athletes and the great teams of yesteryear are often forgotten. And to me, I really enjoy bringing those stories out. So for those that are just starting to listen to the show because we changed time slots 2 months ago, I think you're in for a treat if you like going down memory lane like I do, because every single year we do the DA Show's class reunion where we go back over anniversaries of famous players or favorite teams, famous championships or playoff games that happened in an anniversary year. So this year will be, you know, 20 years since 1997, 30 years from 1987, 25 years since 1992 and beyond. And we'll go back and we'll get players that played on championship teams of those years or players that did great things in a great season those years. We'll do that throughout the summer when there's kind of a lull and a lag in the news of the day. So I went back and I watched the Celtics and Lakers again because I'm like, this is so my wheelhouse. How come I didn't like it the first time around? That rivalry is obviously totally visually arresting. I mean, the Boston Garden, no AC, and the Celtics and Lakers uniforms clashing and the style of play clashing and the backdrop and the celebrity part of it and the race part of it and everything, how they built the NBA was just so tantalizing, every morsel of it, that I'm like, how come I didn't like it the first time around? And I went back and I watched it. I liked it better the second time around, but I still could not get past the narration. I just thought it was the biggest swing and a miss having Ice Cube and Donnie Wahlberg do the narration. I get what they were trying to do. They were trying to pit Laker fan versus Celtics fan. And so you were kind of getting both sides of this rivalry. So I can see what they were thinking. But number one, I mean, if they wrote it, it was pathetic. Because it was so corny and so cliche and over the top. When you don't need to be over the top, what actually happened in reality was good enough. Also, the way that they delivered, I mean, Marky Mark, or no, that's Donnie Wahlberg. Donnie's Boston accent is forced. It's forced. Now, I think he's from Dorchester or Roxbury or something. I'm sure they really have or had an accent, but I think he's probably washed it. And every time he says Boston Garden, he has to say Garden, even though every other R he pronounces. He pronounced 95% of the R's in that narration except for the Garden. And at that point, it had to be the Garden. And I'm like, why are you forcing this? Why do you have to over the top do this? I guess to make it feel more authentic, which, as one of my buddies who grew up in Boston, as we were texting about this, he said, it sounds like somebody's trying to fake the Boston accent, trying to do a fake one, is the way that Donnie sounded. And then Cube is just so over the top, it was like he was narrating NWA Behind the Music. So that's just turned me off. Now, the content itself, I thought it was tedious at times. I mean, does it need to be 7 hours? That felt a lot. To smash two of those into one night, it was like 5 hours in one night, felt like a lot. But overall, it's a very good anthology of all of those games. Maybe to its detriment, went a little too in-depth at times, but it's very, very good. But I just, Cube and Marky Mark, or no, Donnie Mark. What has Donnie done? Can somebody tell me this?
He's got the Wahlburgers. Great show about the burger place.
Okay, is he the more famous one now? No.
No, Mark Wahlberg is in every movie known to man.
Okay. And so
Mark Wahlberg was Marky Mark. Now he's just Mark Wahlberg.
Right, and he does like the DirecTV commercials now, and he's in all those movies.
Yes. Do you really not know Mark Wahlberg?
I get all the Wahlbergs mixed up.
Donnie's the one who looks like Mark gained a couple pounds, added a weird goatee, and could flip a burger.
And what's the most famous thing Donnie's done? I mean, I guess he was in New Kids.
New Kids. Blue Bloods, I believe he's
okay,
in.
Okay, so he's an actor as well.
Yes, great actor, I don't know.
Well, Marky Mark's not a great actor.
Oh, I beg to differ. I think Marky Mark, have you seen Ted and Ted 2? They were fantastic films.
I saw them both. And I do not think that makes him a great actor. He's not winning an Academy Award for either one of those.
Well, that's on the Academy.
Okay. All right. So yeah, that part totally turned me off. But overall, I thought they were good. They were better than but they hammered that freaking race thing over my head. It was like they took a shoe and they just kept saying black, white, black, white, black, white, over and over and over and over on my head. Give me the basketball. It's time for sound check.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Eric Decker, the newest Titan, excited about his new team.
You know, I just like the direction the Titans are going. I actually did a broadcasting boot camp a couple summers ago. I was like, the Titans are going to be the surprise team. And this was talking about last year. Now, just seeing how the roster is being built, and, you know, Marcus is a dynamic young quarterback, and being a veteran receiver, you know, we got a good group in the receiver room, and I want to be a part of it.
Audio courtesy of TitansOnline.com. Yeah, I like that signing a lot by the Titans, and I think they're probably the favorite in that division. I mean, look, I love the Texans defense and I love Deshaun Watson, so I think that that could be a match made in heaven. Although Deshaun as a rookie probably is going to go through some rookie pains. Obviously, that's already past Marcus Mariota. Very solid team. I really like that addition for the Titans. Warren Sapp on the PlayersTribune.com talking about the after effects of football.
We play in a macho league, and we're talking about Hall of Famers now who are immortalized forever, made busts and everything, legends of the game. There's no way any of us want to really admit that we can't remember how to get home or a grocery list that the wife has given us or how to go pick up our kids to the school or whatever it may be. You try to, all right, I'm gonna get a little more sleep. Maybe, you know, something I did last night, maybe something I drank or whatever it is. You try to find a reason that it's not that it's my brain, that I'm not deteriorating right before my own eyes. It's the most frightening feeling, but it's also a very weakening feeling because you feel like a child. I need help. I need somebody to help me find something that I could have found with my eyes closed.
Look, Warren Sapp's been a bozo a number of times throughout his career. I've oftentimes made fun of Warren Sapp, but I think in this case, he's really doing a good public service because I think you do have a lot of macho football players that don't want to admit that they might be losing their brain, because that's a frightening thing, as he says, and you just don't want to admit weakness. I mean, he's only in his early 40s. I mean, the guy is a recent Hall of Famer, so he was part of the 1995 NFL draft, and he's already having memory loss. So I think it's just important for guys that play these really macho positions in this really macho league to say, hey, man, I'm not doing well, and I know that you think that I'm doing well, and I've always acted like I'm doing well, but I'm not doing well. I think that's important. And I think that, as I've mentioned before, I think that this is just for those guys that played in the 90s and early 2000s. Within the last 10 years, it's gotten way better, but before then, it was not. Unfortunately, we're going to see over the next 30 years, a lot of these guys waste away in front of our eyes because they went through when the league was at its toughest, most physical, most grueling in a lot of ways, and right before we didn't know anything, and it's going to be very sad. And finally, on Gio and Jones, they discussed with producer Mikey B how the ribs we thought yesterday were from Bobby B were not from Bobby B.
You taking those ribs home to Bobby Valentine?
Bro? I didn't. Did you try them?
No, I didn't. No, I ended
did
up
any of you guys tried them?
I did, and apparently they were not Bobby Valentine's ribs.
Oh, they were.
The newsroom says, oh, Bobby V brought in ribs, and then I'm leaving, and I when they're leaving, I talk to the PR guy. I go, thanks for the ribs. He goes, Bobby didn't bring them in.
How were they?
My stomach was a little off all day, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, and other people, too. Bogus wasn't feeling well.
Wow.
So you went to the Grand Canaria, too?
Rancid ribs, man.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a rough early afternoon for Mikey B.
Well, you probably shouldn't be eating ribs.
Yeah, probably not. No.
Yeah, I have a tough time with that, even though I've been up.
I've done that before, but they probably shouldn't have them for breakfast.
10 o'clock is when I can eat anything.
We all had these issues. I had half a rack during the PGP taping. Is that PGP released yet?
It will be released at approximately 12:30 p.m. Eastern today.
Okay. You had half a rack yesterday for breakfast.
Yeah.
And everybody walked away going, ugh, it's not sitting so well.
I had the pace on the train yesterday on the ride home.
It was a rough one. Luckily, they were not Bobby V's ribs, although it would have fit much more perfectly if Bobby V's food got me sick just like he does. And that is our sound check. 855-212-4CBS. Yes, the PGP this week centers around Bobby V's ribs. So I don't know if that means you want to listen or not want to listen. Probably go either way on that. Luke is in Indiana, listening on the radio.com app. Good morning, Luke.
Hey, DA, can I get a beam up?
You know, buddy. What's up?
Hey, I was just going to say I really appreciate you and really all the CBS national crew when they talk about some of the more glaring social issues in this country. And you bringing up the opioid thing was just something I really, really appreciate because I work in population and public health here in Indiana. And I don't know, just to put it in perspective, to go along with Chapman's statistics, a few years ago, opioid overdoses, well, not just opioids, but drug overdoses surpassed car accidents and gun violence as the number one cause of death in this country. And here in Indiana, I don't know if you heard about this story a few years ago, but Scott County, Indiana, and Southern Indiana had a grand total of 3 new HIV and AIDS cases for a total of 3 years. 2 years later, there were 171 new cases of HIV and AIDS, and now they're up to over 220. Hmm. And this is a town of 4,000 people.
Yeah. Speaks to this national health crisis that we have going on, and Tiger's right in the middle of it. Tiger's right in the middle of it. And, yeah, man. Like I said, I grew up in a smallish town, known mainly for its farms, being in the middle of the sticks. And like a lot of communities across the country, we got a lot of ODs going on. And it has to do with painkillers and then leading to harder stuff like, you know, meth or mainly like heroin. And I mean, the amount of painkillers that are being prescribed, it's not just Tiger. This is something that every community, most families, a lot of extended families, schools, workplaces are all dealing with, and it's really frightening. Read Rex Chapman's piece on that in SI this week. When we come back, should Kyrie Irving want out of Cleveland right now? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.